We are continuing right now
towards the end of the Chaf Aleph
Omud Beis. Okay. So I started to say that the situation that we have over here now that was mentioned by Rabasi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan says, Hamasi Eitzalim Korban Chasimotim, right? A person who passes away, the father of the family, as I said, has only a small estate, right? So you have sons and daughters, correct? And we said a moment ago that according to the law, the Talmud, the daughters have to be provided for first, and then,
you know, if there's anything left over, then the sons can inherit
whatever is there. Okay? So here is a wise guy. He's a Rasha Aram, remember, right? And he gives the following advice to the sons. Don't Rabbi Asim, Rabbi Yochanan, right? Yisomim shekodmu umochru binachosim uatim.
All right? Let's say the Yisomim, in this case, it means, you know, the sons
who have survived their father, right?
They're orphans.
But he's talking about the sons specifically. And what did they do? They went and they sold the property
even before what?
Even before the daughters had a chance to come to the business in order to submit a claim. Okay, you understand what's happening? This is what they did. Somebody advised them to do so.
So, Masha Mochru Mochru,
then the din is that whatever they sold, it's sold.
In other words, in this particular case, unfortunately, the daughters cannot come and make a claim because of the property is no longer there.
Abaye Omar.
Abaye says that the Rasha, you know, the Rasha Orum is the kind of a guy who ze hamasi eitzel in ko b'nuchosim kerabin shum megandiyal. A different case. Something parallel to the previous case, but that's a somewhat different case. Okay. What do the sons gain? They gain by having the money even before the girls can come to the Besdin to make a claim. They should. But, you see, in those days you have to realize that property was probably the most important. You know, we think in terms, you know, for example, money in the bank or something like that. But let's say a person had, you know, real estate, property, you understand? He had a house, whatever it may be, and so on. So if he had a small one, then obviously from the sale, there isn't going to be too much realized. But nevertheless, what we learned is, you know, that the girls should get first share in whatever the proceeds of the sale are, right? But these wise guys, they went ahead and they acted even before the case came to probate, so to speak. So, in that particular case, what are you going to do? Can you rectify it? Of course, what they did was absolutely wrong. But, unfortunately, the girls are left on a limb because their brothers went and acted like a bunch of paskudyakas. So that, yeah. Yeah. That's what they should be doing, right? They should be. Of course, I mean, the girls can come to the Besdin and try to put in a claim, but the point is that the property that had been left was no longer available over there. It was no longer there, you see. That's the problem. But hopefully, you know, they can pursue something or other, you know, with the Besdin, right?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, see, it's a case of, you know, that the property is gone and it's far fallen, as we would say, you know, that you can't retrieve it again. Okay, right. All right, so the next case that we have,
the one who advised them to do,
but even, yeah, right, okay, or it could be that they themselves, the Rosh Harum, they fall into that category, because they acted, you know, unjustly, there's no question about it. Anything to make a buck, and at the expense of their own sisters, they did that. Yeah. Right. And unfortunately, there are unscrupulous people, and sometimes the law cannot enforce morality. Sometimes it can, sometimes it can't. Abaye Yomar, the case that he has is the following. He says, Ze Hamasi Eitzo Limkor B'Nechosim. He says, this is the kind of a person who advises somebody to sell property to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, as in the case of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The Tanya, as we have learned, the following. So it's Gemara that says, in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, what? Nechosai lecho biacharecho lefloini, alright? Father says, I'm making you my first heir, okay? So that you will inherit me and you'll have an income, you know, after I pass away. But after you pass away, then you are to see to it that so-and-so, who is named in the will, right, is going to receive the proceeds, you know, receive the estate after you. This is what it means, okay? Because if we don't understand that, we'll be all mixed up over here. All right, so that's the situation. So then what happens? And then it says, the Yorad Horishon, Umochar, the Ochal. Yeah, in other words, you have two different beneficiaries. First, the son, as long as he's alive. But then, afterwards, you know, the other, you know, so-and-so, whoever it would be that he names, okay? Okay. All right. So at any rate, all right. The Yorad Horishon Umochar the Ochal. So the first guy, in other words, you know, the son who inherited the father, right? So he went, and either he sold the property on his own, or Ochal. Ochal means he consumed it. You know, he simply used it up, whatever he had over there, right? So in that case, Hasheni motzi miyad halukucha is divrei Rabbi. Rabbi said that the second guy can go to the people who bought the property from the first person, you understand, and sue them and get you know, the what is coming to him back. It's according to Rabbi. But Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, right? Ein la sheni. That the second person can only get whatever might be left over from the first one. So if the first one, let's say, didn't spend all the money that you know, he'd gotten from sale, or he didn't consume you know, every single thing, but there was still something left over, then that's all that the second person can get. So again, who is a Rosh Orem? This is a guy who gives this kind of financial advice that, you know, sell the property or use it, and use it up as much as you want, and let the other guy, you know, worry about this, if there'll be anything left. Which, of course, was not the original intention of the father when he handed over the property. Right. But legally, you know, the guy's in a bind, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. If we follow what Rabbi said, in that case, at least he could go and sue in the Bezdin. But the halacha, it so happens, follows Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel in this case, that the second one can only get whatever he can get, and that's it. Okay? So therefore, whoever came up with this scheme is a Rosh Orem.
Are you saying that the daughter can sue the Bezdin, or the daughters don't have any
Well, if they don't have support, they can come to the Bezdin and insist that the brothers support them. That they have the right to do. They're not totally bereft, you know, of them, right? They have the right to sue, right? They can come to the Bezdin and sue. Yeah, right, right. But still, I mean, what are they going to get if the brothers, you know, used up, you know, whatever they did? You see, that's why they are, you know, guilty of this Rosh Orem, because they went and they used up whatever should have gone to the girls in the first place.
They made a lot of protection.
Right, right.
If you're going to have a law like that, most have a law to follow them.
Right.
Nowadays.
Yeah. Another interpretation, what we mean by a Rosh Orem. Rav Yosef Bar Choma Omar,
Rav Sheshes, he said in the name of Rav Sheshes, he said, Zeh ha-machvi'a acherim b'yochosav. A Rosh Ha'orim is somebody who persuades, who convinces others to go in his way. In other words, he turns others also into Rishayim. Understand? So he's also a Rosh Ha'orim. Right. As Rashi says, he says, Re'u v'asu kamoni, right? See? Do just what I do. V'lechu b'drachai, right? And you follow in my ways. So, right. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like your Rav Ben Nevat, yes. Right. Chayta Yamakti is a Rabbi. Okay, all right. Yeah. All right. The rest of the Rashi over there, he says, Re'u v'asu kamoni, right, see and do what I tell you. V'lechu b'drachai and follow my ways. So he says, Lo niskavim zeh l'haros atzmo kechosid yinei abiyos. This guy wants to appear like a great, big, pious person, right, in the sight of people. But the ein teicha gevoro, however, you know, his what he is inwardly is not what he is outwardly. Ela shelo yedaktiku acharol l'dok b'soy v'soy. The reason he's doing it is because he doesn't want other people to start in to question what kind of a life this one is, and you know, to notice his faults. So he puts on a pious front and he says, "Do what I tell you to do," but at the same time, he himself is not what he makes himself appear to be. Okay? Yeah. Omar, and then Rabbi Zrika Omar Rav Huna. Rabbi Zrika said in the name of Rav Huna, he says, Zeh ha-mekel li'atzmai u'machmir la'acherim. A Rosh Ha'orim, he defines as a person who he's a mekel when it comes to himself. He always gives himself the easy, the light interpretation, right? So he's looking for a kulis, we would say, right? But it's only for himself. To others, he says, you have to follow the strict law and so on, you see. So it's a mekel yatzmei, a machbir l'achirim. Ula Amar, Ula said, Ze shekora v'shona v'lo shimesh tamidei chachamim. You know who is a Rosh Ha'orim? It's a person, he says, who, kora means that he studied Bible, right? Vishana, he also studied Mishnah, but at the same time, Lo Shimesh Tamidei Chachamim. He never had the experience of working together with Tamidei Chachamim, literally serving them, in other words, associating with them, learning from them, and so on. So the result is that whatever he's, you know, whatever he's learned, if he wants to teach others, but he doesn't have the real experience of knowing what is the true meaning of what it is that, you know, he's learned. Well, I wouldn't say it can't happen, of course. I mean, we've known people who've studied yeshivas and gone off in the wrong direction, too. I mean, that's happened. But on the other hand, the point is that if a person learns with a Talmud Chacham and works with him, lives with him, observes him, and so on and so forth, his perspective of Torah is far more than what will be gained simply by studying a book. You understand? Yeah. Yeah. Well, according to he feels that way about it. Okay, we shall call it a night tonight. Thank you for coming out in the midst of this miserable weather, and drive carefully. Thank you. Yes, I noticed coming down here was very slippery. Yeah. Chaf Beis, Amud Aleph, on the top of the page. And tonight is the 17th of
December.
Of December, right, okay. By the way, at the end of tonight's session, we'll have to talk about our next couple of weeks, what we want to do, okay? Yeah. Itmar, we have learned. Korah v'shona v'lo shimesh talmidei chachamim. Okay? Similar for the moment to the line that we had on the top of the page over there. If a person has studied Torah, a person has studied Mishnah, but at the same time the person never had an opportunity to work with Talmidei Chachamim, so that he never served them literally, he never work with them, learn from them, you know, so that, because there are always things that you can learn from a Talmud Chacham that are not necessarily written down in books, you see, that's the point. So Rabbi Elazar Omer, Rabbi Elazar says, Hareza Amhoras, he says, a person like that is an Amhoras. I don't have to tell you, not everybody would be in agreement with Rabbi Elazar's statement. It's a somewhat extreme statement.
Amhoras means an
ignoramus. Yeah, right, an ignoramus. This in spite of the fact that he has learned, he studied Torah, he studied Mishnah. I mean, at least that should be something, right? But nevertheless, he considers him an Amhoras, okay? So Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Omar, he goes in one better, or one worse. I don't know which way you want to consider it. Okay, he says Hareza Boor. He says he is a boor. Now, what is the difference between an Am Haaretz and a boor? Okay, the answer is an Am Haaretz is a person who is not particularly learned, right? But nevertheless. He observes to a certain extent. I mean, he may neglect other things, but certain things he does observe, okay? And also, an Amhoras may have other, what shall we say, you know, personal qualities, midas, as we would say, in other words, that, you know, a decent, see. So he didn't have the world's greatest education, okay? A boor, on the other hand, means actually that he's empty of everything. Doesn't have midas tovos, he has no education, he's nothing. Okay, the expression boor is used in the Talmud in reference to, for example, a field in which, you know, everything is wild, there's nothing there at all. Okay, that's called sedei boor. As a matter of fact, I mean, if you take a look, since we're coming to it in the next week's seder. Not this week, but next week, you know, where Yosef has to interpret the dream of Pharaoh, right? And, you know, he's telling, you know, that there's going to be, after the years of plenty, there'll be years of famine. And he urges him, you know, to prepare for it, because he says, "Va'adobal ha'seishom." If you do so, then the land will not become literally stupefied. In other words, the land will be able to cope. Now, what is the Targum Onkelos over there? It says Va'ara, which is, of course, the Aramaic for the land, lo sevur, it will not become bur, will not become completely empty of anything. This reminds me, of course, of the statement that we have in the Pirkei Avos, where they say, you know, that lo am ha'aretz chosid, right? That an am ha'aretz says, yeah, ein boor yireichet is what it says. It says ein boor yireichet, that a person who is a boor, he cannot be God fearing because he has nothing in him. You see, well, am horitz chosid, am horitz does not know, he doesn't have the capacity for being truly pious. But we see from it that at any rate the am horitz is still in a higher category because of the fact that even if he can't attain to 100% piety because he doesn't have completely the education, but still he has something in him, you know, which. Is decent. Biggest problems that they had in those days with the Am Haaretz, frankly, came in the question of whether the Am Haaretz was taking maestros and things like that. You know, you mentioned the business about Trumas and maestros. They had a problem because not all the Am Haaretz, you know, were was that scrupulous in it. And this is the reason why. For example, for those people who were, we had Purushim, Pharisees, and we'll be talking about Pharisees in a few moments again, but you had Purushim who they ate even chulin, in other words, unhallowed food, you know, the ordinary kind of food, not kosher, but they ate it al taras hakodesh, in other words, with the same scrupulousness as if they would have eaten right holy foods, you know. In other words, like scrupulousness as far as the cleanliness of the hands, not coming in contact with things that are tummy and so on, even though the law of Tumah Tahara essentially really should be applicable, you know, to going to the Beis HaMikdosh and partaking in those things, or in the case of a Kohen eating Tumah, for example, he has to be in a state of Tahara in order to do it and so on. But the Am Haaretz, they were not always that observant, and this is the reason why In the case of, let's say, a person who observed the chumras, as we would say again, you know, the greater restrictions of the Prushim, then in that particular case, or chaver, actually was the term that they used for themselves, okay, chaver. So they would hesitate, you know, to eat with them at the same table, or if they bought from them, they would make sure that they would again take miser or something like that. I mean, to make sure, you see, that
even though it wasn't intended,
even though it may or may not have been, but they wanted to be sure.
Right.
It has all kinds of meanings, but in the language of the Talmud, very often the word chaver means somebody who is very learned. Okay. And, so they were the chaverim. Okay, and that was a term that they liked to apply to themselves. Okay. Like they belong to a very strict society, so to speak. All right. So, as we see then, our sages come with different categories of how to define a person who has studied, but at the same time has never had any practical experience working with the people who are actually Talmidei Chachamim, working with them, observing them, learning from them, serving them, whatever it may be, so that they would have the living experience of the Talmud Chacham. All right. Rabbi Yannai said, Hareze Kusi. He goes one step further down the ladder, okay? He says that a person like that is like a Kusi. Now, this, of course, if you remember when we learned Kiddushin, all right, we learned who were the Kusi, okay? Told you at that time that they were the people who had come from the far corners of the Assyrian Empire, planted in northern Israel after the population of Israel was exiled by the Assyrian kings, okay? And then these people, they sort of adopted Judaism, but at the same time they still had other practices that were looked down upon by the insurgents, right? So these were the people who today we call them Samaritans. Okay, no, we call them Samaritans, but in the time of Talmud they call them Kusi because of the fact that one of the places from which they had come, one of the provinces, was called Kusa or Kuta, if you want to use the Israeli pronunciation. So with them, that's a step further down, because the Kusim, they observed the written Torah, but they didn't observe at all the rabbinic traditions. In other words, Mishnah or anything that would follow, you see. Rav Acha bar Yaakov, he comes one step even lower. He says, Hareze Magos. That's the way I'm pronouncing it. Why am I pronouncing it this way?
Magos.
Because this became a word used both in Latin and in Greek.
Magos?
Magos, right.
Is an S at the end?
In Latin, you spelled it M-A-G-U-S, magus. But of course, it comes from this. It's a Persian word, you understand. And they were, like priests and sorcerers and so on, okay? So he says a person who does this, they're like a magus. In what sense? That just as the magus, he mumbles all kinds of things that he doesn't even understand himself. So these people too, if they don't have the practical experience of working with the Talmud Chacham, they're mumbling things and they don't really know what they're talking about. Okay. By the way, since we're in that season of the year, you know, among the Goyim, I know that you've all heard about the story about the gift of the, we in English would pronounce it Magi.
No.
But in Latin, it's really magi, M-A-G-I, which is the plural of magus, you see. But really, to begin with, it referred to a cult of Persian priests, or Zoroastrian priests, okay?
So this gift you're talking about was a gift from a Zoroastrian priest?
Well, you know, supposedly these three guys came from somewhere out there, and, they came bearing their homage. Look, we don't have to accept the bubbevices that they tell. But I just wanted to point out, you know, that this is the origin of it. Okay? Yeah. All right, let's take a look at Rashi for a moment, and then we'll continue. Okay? All right. First of all, Rashi defines, what do we mean, Shekorah Vashonah? You understand? because it's the subject of other thing. And you might see Shekorah means that he read. No, that's not what he means. Shekorah Mikra means, in other words, he studied Bible. Okay? Vishana means that he studied Mishnah, right? But nevertheless, below Shimesh Talmid Chachamim, Lilmod Siboras HaGemara B'Tamei HaMishnah. The point that Rashi is making over here is that they didn't have the contact with Talmid Chachamim in order to understand what is the reasoning behind the statements that the Mishnah has to say. Or, for that matter, I mean, how do you interpret a passage from the Bible? You and I, we know. I mean, you can take a Bible, you can take a Chumash, for example, and read an English translation and not understand what is it saying, what is the case all about. And so you have to have tradition in order to explain these things. We read, for example, Ayin tachas Ayin, Shein tachas Shein, etc., etc., light and eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, etc., etc., right? What does the New Testament say? It says, you know, you have heard of old, you know, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, right? But I say to you, turn the other cheek, and so on and so forth. In other words, the founder of their religion is rejecting the idea of eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, because presumably it means literally that, you know, if a guy plucks out your eye, you go and you pluck out his eye. This is the punishment. But we know, because of our sages, how they interpret it, that it doesn't mean that at all. What does it mean? It means that if somebody damages your eye, right, then you're entitled to sue him for the compensation of the loss of the eye, for doctor's bills, for the time that you lost working, and so on. This is what it means. In other words, ayin tachas ayin, sages say this is bobon. In other words, you have to pay monetary compensation for the damage that you've done. But certainly doesn't mean literally that you go and pluck out an eye. So it's a false interpretation. But if you don't have the interpretation of our sages, if you never you never studied it, you never learned it, then in that particular case, you would take it literally and think that taket means, you know, that you pluck out an eye for an eye, or you knock out a tooth for a tooth, or whatever it may be. Which is, you know, it's false. So this is why Rashi is stressing over here that v'lo shimesh talmidei chachamim, it says, v'lmod sivaras ha-gemara, to learn what is the reasoning of the Gemara. Sivara is always, you know, intellectual reasoning, right? B'tamei ha-mishnah, when it comes to understanding what is the reason for the statement in the Mishnah. Mahe, right? What are they? So in that case, Rasha who? A person who does not do that, why is he considered a Rasha? He says, Shein Torah so al buyan. This Torah is not 100% clear. It's not 100% correct. The Yain Lilmod Hamid. And therefore, people should not learn from him. Why? Shal Yedei Hate Omim Yesh Hiluk Be'isav Heter. Right? Because if we understand reasoning, the reasons why the Mishnah says this or that or the other, and we have, you know, the proper background, and in that case we can realize that there are differences whether it comes to Issa V'Heter, in other words, things that are prohibited and things that are permitted, right? Just a simple illustration. You know, the laws of kashrus are quite complex. I don't have to tell you that, okay? But, you know, it's matzah chabol. I mean, that something happens, okay? So in that case, you have to know whether a certain thing can be considered as, whether it's treif completely, or whether there is a heter, you know, for it to permit it, and so on. I'm not going into any specific examples, but, you know, let's say that if you had, let's say, a large pot of meat cooking, okay, and a drop of milk accidentally fell into it, then if you could measure the amount over there, find out that the quantity, you know, the meat and what's cooking in it and so on, and it's more than 60 times the drop of milk, then we consider that the drop of milk becomes bottled, becomes nullified, okay? And that the meat becomes permissible, okay? So this is an example of what I mean. But if you don't know, you haven't studied, and in that particular case, you wouldn't know. So an issur v'heter, I mean, that's one example. Or the dinei momonos, let's say that you're asked to sit in judgment in a bezdin, right? So let's go to the chayev, right? You have to know where it is that you declare that a person is, the one who is, what shall we say, not guilty, right? Or the person who is the guilty party. Right, I mean, no, of course, I mean, I'm using the term where, where Zaka and Chayev is, in the case, let's say, Dini Nefoshes, but in the case of Dini Momonos, the terms actually refer to who is the one who is in the right, which party of the two is in the right and which one is the wrong. Because according to that, you would know, how to compensate. But you need the background in order to know how to judge, okay? Uber Taros, and when it comes to Taros, in other words, that you have to know whether something or someone becomes either Tomei or Tohor, right? So you have to know the Tomei or Tahir, how to declare it. Kid'oma b'chamaduchte, as we find it in many different places in the Gemara, it says, my tamom amarochi, marochi, what is the reason that this authority ruled as follows and another authority ruled the other way around? After all, we know we're constantly coming into it, right? That there are differences of opinion, but we should understand also to try to understand what is the reasoning behind, why they have these divergent views, okay? My Tamar Marhochim are Hochi, right? The Yomar my Benaihu, and then the Gemara would continue and say, what is the difference between them? Iko Benaihu, the reason is that between them is the following situation where they're in disagreement and so on and so forth. Kach v'chach, this is what it is. Okay, now, the Orum Hu, this is a continuation for the benefit of, those who were not here last week. We were saying that there are different people who we consider a Rasha Orum. In other words, a cunning, wicked person. So this is a continuation of the same idea. In other words, a person like this could also be considered what? A cunning, wicked person. Why? Sheha Shomea is Kolo, because someone who listens to him, Shona Mish Yosav, he learns, according to his teachings. Kisavur, because, he thinks Shehu Boki B'tameyem, he's well-versed in all these different reasons. V'nuhagim Bokovad, and at the same time, they show him respect, K'talmidei Chacham, as if he were a Talmid Chacham. Respect due to true Talmidei Chacham is shown to this person, even though he never really learned what the reasoning was behind it, and so he doesn't. Okay? Then the question is, why do we say Hareza Am Ha'oretz? Why if a person, even though he studied, but Lo Shimesh, he could be considered like an Am Ha'oretz, Hareza Am Ha'oretz? So he says Shechoshud Ala Maestres Ve'al Taharos, because he is suspected concerning whether or not he's taking Maestres, he's taking the tithes out, right? And also, whether he is careful, to abstain from those situations where he could be tummy, okay? Bur, Rashi says, is Garua Me'am Horus. He says he's even worse than an Am Horus, right? Kusi, what about the Kusi? He says, Kusi, we also lechol pito, v'yeno. You're not even allowed to eat the bread of a Kusi or the wine of a Kusi. Why? The Kevan Shelo Shimesh Tachomim. Because inasmuch as he has never studied, he's never served the sages, Einu makpid al divrei chachomim b'datam, right? Then he is not careful with the teachings of the chachomim, to know what they are saying. Velo shana, and he never learned. Ela laharasatz b'ketam chachomim. All that he wants to do is to show himself off, that is to portray himself as being a talmid chachomim. Now, who is a magos? So he says, Bechashev. He is, today we use it in the sense of a magician, but as a matter of fact, what does the word magician come from? It comes from this word. You understand? In other words, magic is the practice of the magus. Okay? So he's a magician, okay? What does he do? Literally, he seizes the eyes, but what it means is actually that he fools you, right? The gonev is halabovos, and he steals hearts. In other words, you know, he fools people, you know, and he persuades them to do the wrong thing, right? The abzer king, and the person who hasn't learned is in the same category as Anagas, because he's also fooling people, and you know, without giving them the proper knowledge, you know, of what Yiddishkeit expects of them. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok, getting back to the text.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok said, "Mistabra k'Rav Acha bar Yaakov." Says it makes sense what Rav Acha bar Yaakov had said. Okay, if you remember, he said he compared him to the Magus. Okay, why? The Amra Yinshe says because there is a popular expression, you know, like a popular proverb. Okay, Ratin Maguso v'lo yoda mayomar. That just as the magusa, the magus, okay, mumbles whatever it is that he's saying, right? He mumbles, v'lo yoda, and he doesn't know what it is actually that he's mumbling, then to need tano, then you also have a tano who teaches, v'lo yoda mayomar, and he doesn't know what he's saying. Okay, to analyze this last statement a little bit more. First of all, Rashi. Ratin. Okay, what is Ratin? So he says, Targum Chover Chover. In the Torah, we have, you know, that certain things are prohibited to a Jew, right? To follow a chover chover, in other words, somebody who is a necromancer, well, actually, that's another category over there, of a chover, and the midore shall amaze him, and so that's the necromancer, okay? So that's prohibited. So it's the type of magic prohibited to us as Jews, okay? So there, they use the word magus in the translation, the targum, you know, in order to explain chover chover, okay? And ratin means lochesh. In other words, he whispers different things. He makes an incantation, right? Lochesh ha-mechashev es mechashev, right? The mechashev whispers his incantations, or he chants his incantations. V'yeinu mevin mahem, and he doesn't know even what he's saying. V'ma perushim, and what is their meaning? Elakach ma'aseihem, but simply this is what he does, right? Shemach shefus bal yedei osam halachoshim, because the acts of marriage magic. The acts of magic comes by means of these incantations. Does anybody know what abracadabra means, for example, right? Or hocus pocus, jimity hocus, things like that. They don't mean anything particularly, right? I mean, people try to look, you know, and see maybe they can give them. But, you know, you say, okay, hocus pocus, jimity hocus, or abracadabra, and so on and so forth. And that's what doesn't mean anything. But he's saying the same thing. I saw one. Yeah, right, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Okay, you can name others as well. Okay, so that they don't make any sense. I mean, there's no logic behind it, but nevertheless, this is the introduction in order to perform an act of magic. Okay, so likewise, Tanitana, likewise, you might have a person who has learned the Abzer Tana Shelo Shimesh B'Talmud, right? And I'll explain that in a second. A Tana who has not actually gone through the stage of working with a Talmud Chacham, right? So Bona Mishnah, so Shona Mishnah, so he repeats, you know, what he has heard, V'yeinu yodei amahi, but he doesn't really understand what it is that he's saying. Okay, so add a couple of words, okay, to what Rashi has to say. First of first of all about the Marcus himself. Steinsaltz makes the point that the Magus, or sometimes also called Chavorim in the Talmud, these were, as I said, Persians who were Austrian priests, okay? And he says that they were using in their prayers and their incantations, they were using an old form of the language that they themselves, you know, that they didn't understand themselves. This, I mean, we've seen even among Christian sects today, that, for example, there are, you know, there's an old form of Russian, let's say, that the people no longer speak. But they still use it in the Russian Orthodox Church, even if they don't know what they're saying or something like that, you see. So that he's making that's my comparison, but nevertheless, I mean, because I know that, you know, you have old Russian that a lot of people don't understand, just as you can have archaic Greek that not too many people understand, and of course in the Latin Church, I have to tell you, a lot of the priests of today don't understand any Latin either, and things like that, you know. But, you know, they're saying, you know, today, of course, they switched to English, but that's besides the point. But when the Mass was still being celebrated, as they say, in Latin, not every priest was, that learned in the language, so they understood every single word, you know, that what it meant. But nevertheless, that's their form of davening, that's their form of davening. So that's that. Now, we have to give, however, another translation of the word Tana. Because this, as you know, we normally talk about Tanoim and Amoroim, right? And we talk of them with the greatest respect. So the answer is that the word Tano is used in various ways, just as the word Amora also had different meanings behind it, okay? Tano means somebody who learned something. And in the time long before they wrote down the Torah Sheba Al Peh, there were people who had tremendous memories that when they heard a teaching, it would register with them, even if they didn't know what exactly it meant. So that we have many cases in the Talmud that, for example, let's say, you know, that the Tana came and taught this in the presence of Rabbi so-and-so, okay? And he quotes the text. And then the Chachamim first get down and they start in to analyze it and to see, you know, what it is. So in this case, the word Tana then means somebody who has a tremendous memory for repeating a text exactly the way he heard it, but nevertheless, it doesn't mean that he understands what it is that he's saying. Okay? So we see now the comparison. Of course, subsequently, the word Tana, as I said, is a word of honor. It means, you know, the great teachers of the Mishnah, they were Tanoim. Okay. Now, even the word Amora, a term that afterwards came to be applied, you know, to the people, the authorities in the Gemara, the word Amora sometimes we find in the sense of, like, in those days, the system of lecturing very often was that the teacher would make a statement, and then the Amora would be the person who, I guess he must have had a very loud voice or something. He was the microphone, so to speak. So that when you had a lecture hall full of Talmidim over there, so the Amora's voice carried. And, the speaker, the Rebbe himself only had to whisper into the Amora, you know, what it is that he's saying. You have a somewhat similar statement, too, concerning what they call the Torgamon, also, that he was the one who gave the interpretation that was, you know, spoken to him in a soft voice by the Rebbe. So the Rebbe didn't have to strain his voice in order to give it, but he had the Amora or the Torgamon, you know, as the middleman, so to speak, in order to teach. And then, of course, I mean, then the Rebbe, you know, would go into the discourse and explain everything and so on. So this is why I say we have to understand the terms that are being used over here. So in that case, then, what we're saying over here is what? that these persons, these are like the Tana over here, he memorized a text of, you know, a Mishnah, but he didn't understand what it meant. And that's why he compares him to the what? To the Magus, who also says things without really understanding what it is that he is saying. Okay? Tana Rabbanan.
Back to the text?
Yeah, back to the text. Another interpretation, what do we mean by an Am Haaretz, right? Says, Ezehu Am Haaretz, who is an Am Haaretz? He says, Kol Sheinu Kore Kriya Shma Shakris V'Arvis B'Vircho Seho, Divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir comes in with the following interpretation. He says, if a person doesn't say Krishna in the morning and at night with its blessings, then he's an Am Haaretz. I assume that according to Rabbi Meir, he assumed that every good Jew knew how to say at least Krishna, the words of Krishna, but that he know, you know, which brachas precede Yetzirah Barichoshek and Abba Rabba, or Et Daida Barivarogim and Abba Salem, and so on and so forth, and then what are the brachas that follow afterwards. You know, if he hadn't learned that, then he's still in the category of what? Venamoris. This is Rabbi Meir's interpretation of what an Am Haaretz is, okay? V'chachamim oimrim, v'chachamim say, kol sheinu moniach tefillin. If anybody does not put on tefillin, then he's an Am Haaretz. Well, I hate to say it, but in America we got plenty of them today, including very prominent members of shuls,
yeah.
Certainly conservative congregations, and reform temples, shein upkelet, I mean, that
yeah.
They don't, okay? Benazai Omer, Benazai says, Kol she'ein lo tzitzis b'digdo. Whoever doesn't carry, doesn't wear tzitzis in his garment. Okay? He's an Amoritz. Rabbi Yosef ben Yosef Omar, Kol she'eish lo bonim v'yenu megadlen l'moy Torah. He says, if a person has children and he does not raise them to learn Torah, then he is also an Amoritz. Okay? Acherim Omrim, there are those who say as follows, Afilu kore vishodim leshe vishtal min chachomim zehu am ha'oretz. Okay, the acherim in this case are really, you know, they're saying you know, essentially what we had up before. Okay, maybe it represents another point of view, but more or less they coincide. Because what are they saying? They're saying, "Afilu korei v'shone," right? Even though he studies Torah and he studies Mishnah, right? Velo shimesh talmidei chachamim, right? But he does not serve the talmidei chachamim. Has nothing to do with, you know, working together with them. Zehu am haaretz, right? Then, Korah Relashono, what if a person studies Torah, but he does not study Mishnah, doesn't study Talmud, so to speak, right? Hareze Bor, then he is a Bor. Lo Korah Relashono, if he does nothing, never studies either Bible or Mishnah or anything at all, then all of our Kosovo in there concerning him, the verse in Yirmiyahu says, Vizorati Espes Yisrael, Espes Yehuda, I will literally seed the house of Israel and the house of Judah, Zera Odom and Zera Behema, with the seed of man and the seed of beasts. Needless to say, this is not the pshat of the pasuk, because what Yirmiyahu was talking over there, actually they were divrei nechama, they were words of consolation to tell us, you know, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam would take this land which has been laid waste by the enemies of the Jewish people, and they will once more be, you know, come to flourish with both men and beasts and so on. But naturally, when it comes to a drash, what is the drash? The drash is obvious. The drash is that such a person who neither studies, no matter what it is, he doesn't study Bible, doesn't study Talmud or anything like that, he's like in the category of a beast. In other words, we're equating, you know, such a person with a beast. Okay. Yes, it says in Tillim, you know, Odom of the Hema Teshia Hashem, right? Literally, it means man and beast he will save, oh God, right? Rabbeinu Shlom sells, but the popular understanding is Sodom and Behema, that if a person is like a Behema, then God help him, right? Okay.
Isn't there a passage about that in the Obel Etzion?
Yeah, right.
In
Obel Etzion. No, we say Obel Nehem Teshuah Hashem. This is Tzitkos Tzedek. We say Shabbos after
that. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. No. Okay. Yeah, behemoths, yeah. Yeah.
Also, I'm digressing about the guy who memorized everything tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I trust that he understood. I know, you know, I have an attic full of sichas of the Rebbe. And, right, yeah. So, yeah, well, I understand, you know, that was the system. I mean, that they had the people over there who really could memorize word for word what the Rebbe was saying, and then afterwards they would publish it in the form of the sichas of the Rebbe. Okay, let's continue right now. There's a pasuk in the Sefer Mishle, in the book of Proverbs, which says, Yirah es Hashem b'nei b'melech, right? Literally, fear the Lord, my son, and also the king, right? V'yim shonim al tisarav, and do not mingle with shonim. Question is only, what is shonim? So one of the explanations, the usual translation of shonim is of those who go away from the straight path, okay? Those who follow other things, because, you know, the idea sometimes means that, okay? Like we say, Mishunah. What is Mishunah? Somebody who is strange or something. In other words, it's not in the normal scheme of things. Right. Misa Mishunah, right, of course, is a kind of a death, you know, which is, it's not the normal type of a death, correct? Okay. So, the question is, how do they touch it? So, Omar Rabbi Yitzchak says that the word shonim, who are the shonim? It says, Elu sheshonim halochas. These are the people who, you know, they learn the various halochas, as we said before, they memorize it, right? But at the same time, they don't understand what it is that they are learning. That's how he touches it. So they say, Pshita, isn't this obvious? Ma'udu Taiman, maybe you would say that maybe the word Shonim means something else. Shonim Bechet, maybe it means people who are repeaters in sin. Because the word Shoneh is related to the word Sheni, Shnayim, and so on. You understand? It's interesting how in Hebrew a root can have different interpretations. Same root letters. But put it in one form, it means one thing. Put it in a different form, it means something else, and so on. Right. So that obviously it lends itself to interpretation. Okay? So what is the Shonim Bechet? It says, Rav Huna. As Rav Huna said, it's a famous Gemara where Omar Rav Huna. Rav Huna said that Kevan She'ovar Odom Aveira, the Shonaba, once a person has committed an Aveira, it's committed a transgression, and then he did it again, second time, right? So Hutrula, it becomes permissible to him. So they say, Hutrula? How can you say that? In other words, I'm quoting now about what the original discussion is, right? Yeah, what do you mean, hutrolo? Hutrolo means, you mean, how could it become permissible if you do it a second time? But the answer is that once a person has committed this transgression, right, then he says to himself, no, if I did it once, I can get away with it another time. And so that is hutrolo. Okay. So, komashbola. Okay. This shows us that, you know, there's a possibility to interpret the public way. Tada. We have learned what? that hatanoyim mevali oilam, that the tanoyim are those who destroy the world. If you remember previously we had, and these are the following people, mevali oilam, that they destroy the world. So we learned that among them are a list of tanoyim. So they say mevali oilam salkotot, like how could you even say that, you know, the tanoyim destroy the world? On the contrary, they help to build this world, right? So Omar Rabino, well, the one that I'm talking about says Rabino is Shemorin Halacha Mitoch Mishnasan. They are teaching Halacha only from what they have memorized, but without, you know, going into it any further, without really understanding what it is. Tanya Namehochi, likewise we've learned along these lines, Omar Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua said, the Chim of Ali Oilam Hain, are they the destroyers of the world? On the contrary, these are the people who settle the world. In other words, they make the world livable, right? Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Halichos Olam Loi, right? There's a Pasuk of the Chavakuk, which says, Halichos Olam Loi, literally referring to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, that literally is going about the world, you know, are his alone. Rabbeinu Shalom has his own. But there's a famous quotation that we find in several places. As a matter of fact, we find it in our Siddur. If you take a look after Enkel Akenu and after Pidim HaKtoris, right, you find a statement over there which says, Kol Hashena Halachis Bechol Yoim, whoever studies Halachis every single day, Muftach Lo Shehu Ben Olam Haba. So he can be assured that he will have Olam Haba, right? Shenemar Halichos Olam Loi, as the Pasuk says, Halichos Olam Loi, and then it says, Al Tikrei Halichos Elo Halochos. In other words, by studying Halocha every day, this is like the stepping stone, you know, to getting into Olam Haba. Okay? So we see then, if that's the case, then, you know, we shouldn't, you know, denounce the Tanoim, they're not Mevaliyim, right? Elo Shemeron Halacha Mitoch Mishnasan. But what is being condemned? What is being condemned is those who, you know, who teach the Halacha only on the basis of what they know, but not on the basis of what others know, not on the basis of discussion. And, you know, that's all that they know. In other words, in order to render a decision, you really have to have studied deeply and have the opportunity to discuss it with others and so on, you know, to try to get a variety of opinions and so on. Well, if it's Boerim Halacha, then that's, you have to give a decision. That's what it means, okay? The discussion itself is one thing, but if, you know, you, on the basis of limited knowledge, you give an opinion, you see, this is, this could be a problem.
I mean, their own viewpoint.
Essentially, this is what it'll be, right? And will not be necessarily, you know, what, how others feel about it or how others understand it.
Viewpoint, they could vary from the mainstream.
Yeah, definitely. This is where the problem lies, right? Okay. Then, among the others who are mentioned is Bavali Elam, we said there is also an Isha Perusha, literally a woman who is a Pharisee. What's a woman who is a Pharisee?
All of a sudden.
So, Tan Rabban, Besulor Sayyonis, V'almona Shovavin, V'katan Shalei Kolu Loi Chadosha Har'el Bavali Elam. Three different people are mentioned over here. One is a Besula Salyonis. In other words, a maiden, she's not married yet, right? And she davens all the time. See in a minute, you know, why they condemn her as being the Valiyan. Same thing is an Almona, a widow, who's a Shogavis. In other words, she goes around from house to house, always seeking, you know, to gossip with her friends, okay? And the other one is Koton Shalei Kolo Lo Chadosha, which would mean literally a young child who has not yet attained any maturity. Now,
we need the Gemara in order to explain this, obviously. So let's take a look at Rashi first of all, okay?
All right.
Where you see where it says Megillah and so on and so forth on the side over there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. So first of all, he says, mean that these are people who destroy the world. On the contrary, what are they doing to others? So, you know, at the end, they say, Shemorin halochim atech mishnosim. Ko omar shemevalon oilam. Right. In other words, those who give, who render halacha only based upon what they have learned, but not upon what others, so they destroy the world. Why? The ro'os tawus, because they'll be giving mistaken teachings. You understand? In other words, the teachings that they render are based on error. The kevon shein yodin tamiya mishnah, right? Because since at times they don't know what is the reasoning of the teaching of the mishnah, right? So pe'omim gormim shemedamin lo dovor sheinu doyme. So at times they make a comparison and they'll come up, you know, with something that they think is similar to what they have learned, and at the same time it's not, okay? The od yesh mishnayas harbei, and also there are also many mishnayas, the aminon, or mani, where in the discussion of Gemara they say, who actually is the author of this particular statement? Because when they want to know that, obviously there are others usually, you know, who have different opinions, right? Hermani Plonihu, right? He is so-and-so. V'yechidoi, right? But he's only the opinion of one person. This is what Yechidoi means over here, you understand? Represents only one point of view, namely his point of view. The less hilchos or kavod in halacha taka does not follow him, right? The yod she'enan yodim machlekes tanoim or rishonim halacha divrei mi. And likewise, when it comes to a controversy, right, of the earliest tanoim, as for example, let's say Shimon ben Shetach, Ishmael Naftalion, Hil v'Shamay, even and so on, right? The rishonim, okay. Halacha kedivrei mi. Who does the halacha follow, right? So hilkach moyen horoyes tovus. So therefore, because they don't know, they don't have this background, so the teachings that they give are mistaken teachings. Halichas elam lo, as we said before, right? This, you know, hashena halachas elam shelo b'zchusim. In other words, a person studies halacha, then what? Then he gets his elam haba. As the result is the reward for it. Now, we said, first of all, a besula sayalonis, right? Someone, maiden who prays a lot. Says, Balas Fili explains that, right? The almono shegodis, and a woman, a widow who goes around gathering about, he says, Balas shechenus, she has a lot of neighbors, women neighbors, olechas and vakeres, right? Shechenus echotomi, she's always, going around visiting them and so on. Hare Elam Avaliyon, right? And also the Kotan Shalom Kolo Loi Chadosha. So we'll come to them, to that in a little moment. Okay. Yeah, right. Okay. Well, Rashi wants to explain, okay? Hare Elam Avaliyon, they are people who are destroyers of the world. Why? She'enon Elo Noyafos and Bechashvos. That in reality, they are like adulterers and witches. Why? Umaras Hatzbah Kodesh. In other words, their kavodas are not good. In other words, what they want to do, they give outward appearances, right? Umaras Hatzbah Kodesh, Kodesh, right? That outwardly they act as though they were the most pious people in the world. But nevertheless, in reality, in their heart, they would rather, use it as a cover-up for what they're doing, which is not nice, okay? Shelo yivdeku achrehen. Okay, so that people should not, go and inquire after them. Okay. And then, what is cotton? Shelo kolo leichadosh. She says, come on first, we'll explain that as we go on. All right. Now, needless to say, this is one opinion, okay? if you'll take a look, well, you know, Tosfos goes into this in much greater detail, and so. Yeah, well, Tosfos-san said pretty much the same as what Rashi says. He's not really adding anything over there. All right. So at any rate, let's get back to our text right now, okay? So the Gemara says, Eini, is this so? V'ho'omar Rabbi Yochanan, didn't Rabbi Yochanan say, Lo madnu yiras chet mibesula? We learn what is true yiras chet, in other words, fear of sin, from a maiden. V'kibul sachar me'almona, and also what it means to receive a reward from an almana, right? Yiras chet mibesula. How about the first case that we just mentioned? In other words, to learn what it means to be pious from a maiden. The Rabbi Yochanan Shmo'a Lahahi Besula. Rabbi Yochanan heard the prayers of a certain maiden, Dinofla Apa, who literally fell on her face. But, you know, this is like, when we say Tachten, you know, we... Right, okay. But actually, originally, they used to really fall on the floor, right, exactly, when they came to that part in the service. The Ka'amra, so in other words, she was deep in prayer, and she said, Rabbeinu Shalelam, Borosa Gan Eden, Borosa Gehinnom. You created Gan Eden, and you also created Gehinnom. Borosa Tzadikim, Borosa Rashoim. You created people who are righteous, and you created people who are wicked. Yehi ratzoim ufonecha, may it be thy will, shelo yekoshlu bi b'nei Adam, that people should not stumble because of me. In other words, I should not be the cause of leading people to sin and depriving them of Gan Eden. So this is yiras chet that we learn from them. And how about schibot sachar, the reward that we should receive? This we learn from Almana. Dahi Almana, there was a certain Almana, the Havai based Nishte Beshivusa. There happened to be a shul right in her neighborhood, right? Called Yoimo every day, Havas Asya Matzla Beit Midrasha de Rabbi Yochanan. Every day she would come and she would daven in the base medrash of Rabbi Yochanan, which of course was at a distance from where she lived. So Omalah, so he said to her, that is, Rabbi Yochanan said to her, Biti, my daughter, he says, Lo Beis HaKnesses, Bishivu Vaseich, isn't there a shul in your own neighborhood? So why are you coming over here? Omalah, so she said to him, Rabbi, the Lord Secha Pesiyas Yeshli, shouldn't I receive a reward from the Rabbeinu Shalalem for the additional steps that I take in order to get here? You know, we speak about Sechar Halicha, right? The reward that you get for going to shul. So naturally, she figures that the more that she goes, the further that she goes to a shul, the greater will be the reward. So likewise, he says, you can learn that the more that you do, the more reward you should expect. Okay? So, what are we talking about when we made that statement, you know, that the Sula, Tzayliyonis, and Amona, and so on and so forth, you know, that they are among the Vali Elim? So he says, it's Ki Ko'amar, when that statement was made, it was Kegain Yuchni Basrutive. This was in reference to people who act like Yuchani, the daughter of Ritive. Okay, so who is this girl? Who is this lady? Okay. The kibos chami almana Rashi. You see it over there where we left off. The kibos chami almana is such hoy so to rachas atzmo. In other words, she burdened herself more. She purposely, you know, took extra effort. Minatzorach, more than she had to. Kedei lekabel schar, in order to receive schar. Givnefor shviyazil, as it says, Lomadu sheyatriach odim atzmo b'mitzvah. From this we learn that a person should put an effort in a mitzvah, right? Lekabel sachar yoseh, in order to receive greater reward. Okay. And then, what was her prayer? The prayer was Barasa Tzadikim, right? You created righteous people. Chol Gan Eden, that's what the Gimel Ayin stands for, so that they should inherit Gan Eden. And Barasa Rishoyim, you created wicked Lirash Gehinnom to inherit Gehinnom, right? And then she prayed, Shalo Yekoshlu Bi B'nei Odom, right? That people should not sin because of me, Lahapsit Chelkom, that they would lose their portion in Olam Haba, Al Yedei. Al Yodi, through my, you know, because of me, Megan Eden with the Rosh Gehinnom, that they would lose their opportunity to go to Gan Eden, and instead they go to Gehinnom. So he says Kikamar. So when he said that these are Mevali Elam, it's Kagon Yuchni Basvativi. Who is Yuchni Basvativi? So Rashi explains, she was an Almona Machshefa Hayisah. She was a widow who was a witch. Ukshemagia es ledas isha, and when the time had come for a woman to give birth, hayeso utseres rachmo b'machshefus, then she would have incantations in order to prevent the woman from having her womb open. In other words, to make it tougher for the woman to give birth, right? Right, and after the woman suffered a great deal, hoyeso ameres, she would say then to the woman, eilech v'akav v'avakesh rachmim, I will go and I will pray, ulai tishoma tfilosi, maybe my prayer will be heard, right? V'holeches v'soyseres kishofera, and then she would go and she would like counteract the spell that she had put on the woman before, right? V'hablod yotzei, right? And the child would give birth. So in other words, she purposely prevented the woman from having an easy childbirth in order to appear what? As a very pious woman who, because of her prayers, the woman finally was able to give birth, right? So, pa'machas happened once. He had somebody who was working for the day in her house. Okay? And she went to the home of the woman who was in childbirth, right? The Shoma HaSochir, and this worker heard Koil Hakshofim Miskashkashim Bichli, the sound of the magic incantations rattling in a vessel. Kemosha blood mekashkesh beyeme, just as the child was poking around in the mother's womb, right? Uvo ufosaches begufasakli, so he went and he opened up the cork, the cover to this vessel. The akshofim yotzu. And the magic incantations, they flew out, right? The havlad nolad, and the child was born. So then the yodu ki balas kishofim. So that's how everybody found out that she was a balas kishofim. So when he says that they are like the vali elam, he means only people who act this way, like this woman who wanted to appear as a great tzaddikus, right? By helping the kimpetoren, as we would say, the woman in childbirth, right? Where in reality, she was more interested in her own, her own pursuits of being a machshepa, of being a witch. Okay. All right. So, in other words, this is not to imply then that women who daven are bad people. On the contrary, we learn, pureness of heart in davening from such a woman. And we learn what it means, to take an effort in order to perform a mitzvah from such a woman. All right, let's go just a little bit weiter. Okay. Now, the third one that they said is what? Koton shelo kololei chadosha, right? So that's what they're asking now. My koton shelo kololei chadosha. What is the meaning of a child who is not, literally his months have not yet been completed, in other words, he is not mature enough? So hochet kagimo, this is the how they explained it. This is a Talmud Chacham who literally he kicks his teachers. In other words, he rebels against their teaching, so he is an immature person because he did not really mature with his Rebbe's teachings. Okay. That's one interpretation. Rabbi Abba Omar, Rabbi Abba said as follows, he says, Zeh Talmid Shelohi Gelohi Roa Umore. This is a student who has not yet matured enough in order to be able to give decisions of Torah, and yet at the same time he goes and he gives decisions of Torah. The Omar Rab Abahu, as Rabbi Abahu said, Omar Rab Huna, right? Omar Rab, and Rabbi says, my Dirsiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk that we have in Mishnah, in the book of Proverbs? Ki Rabim Chalolim Hipilo, Vatumim Kol Havergeho, literally, many are the slain that she has cast down, and also all those who have been killed as a result of her are mighty. Says, what does it mean? Ki rabim chalulim hipilo, zeh talmid chacham shelo higia lo hiroa umora. That part of the pasuk can refer to a talmid chacham who has not yet reached the stage where he should be able to give an opinion to teach, you know, Torah. Nevertheless, he teaches. Va'atzumim kol harugeho, many are those who were slain as a result. Zeh talmid chacham shehigia lo hiroa ve'eina mora. This is a Talmud Chacham who does have the ability, he has the learning in order to teach, and he does not teach. So either way is no good. To teach where you don't have the background for it is wrong, and if you have the background and refuse to teach, they're both wrong. Okay? Rashi, third line from the bottom over there, Mabayit Berabbeisav, one, you know, he kicks against his rebbes, the Korilei Koton Shalei Kolo Chadosha. So they refer to him as a child who is not fully matured, Al Yedei Sheyoma Miskatsman, because his days are going to become shortened, Kedamim Perakam and Chagiga. In other words, that punishment for that will be that he will die young. That's one thing. Ki rabim b'chalolim hipila, he says, b'yisha zora mishlei. We're talking about a woman who is not, you know, a person's wife, and it goes chasing after. That's what the passage initially refers to. Goes chasing after another woman to whom he's not married and who is another man's wife, right? In other words, an adulteress, right? Right. The Talmud shein enoyei atzmei kishura, and if a person is a Talmud, in other words, he's studying Torah, and he does not behave correctly, so currently nami hochi, so he's called this also. And then Zatama Shalohigia says, Pilo, Loshen Nofal, or Nefal, he says, Loshen Nefal, you know what a Nefal is? Nefal is a child who, a miscarriage.
Oh.
Shalokolo loy chodoshav. In other words,
talking about a fetus.
Yeah, right. A fetus who is aborted, so aborted, to speak. Yeah. You know, of course, the word aborted itself, you know, there are two ways to interpret that word. One is that, you know, it's a natural, spontaneous abortion, as we say. In other words, it happened, you know, this is a miscarriage, in other words. And the other one, of course, is the, you know, the induced abortion.
Right.
It's a different story. Okay. So, person who teaches without the background really to know what he's talking about is like the miscarriage. Okay. Va'atzumim says Loshen Otsem. He says Loshen Otsem Einov. You know, how do I say to open your eyes? Now I say to close your eyes. The answer is that in Hebrew we have special verbs for it. To open eyes, we use the word Pokeach Einayim. Okay? And how do we, yes, pokeach einayim. From this we have the word pikeach, a person who, you know, literally is open-eyed. In other words, he's wise because, you know, he can see things and so on, okay? Pokeach ivrim, we say, right, we say, we praise God who is, he opens the eyes of the blind, so that this is pokeach, right? It's not pokeach nefesh, it's a different form of the same root. It's
same word.
Pikuach
nefesh.
Pikuach nefesh, right. Okay. What is the opposite? How do I say to close the eyes? Yes, you say, La'atzom esmeinayim. Otzem. Otzem esmeinayim. He shuts his eyes. He keeps them firmly closed, literally, is what it says. Okay? So he says, Va'atzumim kol harugeho. He says, Loshen otzem einayim. Why? Shesokrim pihem. They close their mouths, right? Sogrim pihem. The Yena Morim the Tzorchei Harat, and they do not teach when they could be contributing, you know, the correct teaching, guide people aright. Okay. The Yad Kama. Let's do one more line on top of the next page. The Yad Kama. At what point can we consider that a person has learned and studied enough Torah so that they can begin to render decisions maturely? Says Ad Boim Shene.
40.
The age of 40. Any? So the Gemara questions it. The Rabba Uri Bishop, the Rabbi Uri. So, but didn't Rabbi, Rabbo, excuse me, others say it was Rava, and others in a different text it says Rava instead of Rabba. He only lived 40 years, and yet he renders decisions, and he, you know, and was highly regarded and everything else. So how could we say that only at the age of 40? So he says, Bishovin. In other words, where you have the equal ability of others in your community, you know as much as they do, then in that case you could. But if you're inferior in your ability, you don't have the background and so on that they have, then don't wait until you've matured further before you do it. Okay? All right, so we'll stop at this particular point. All right, now let's from the days. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. I'm on.
All right.
Yeah. What does this do, by the way?
Huh?
What is this? Oh, that's there. Only a tell. Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah said that there are certain things that they are included among the Vali Olam, I mean those who destroy this world. And we've already gone through a series of people who are not worthy to do what they're doing. I mean, people are making a pretense or whatever it may be. In other words, we said, for example, before about the Talmud Chacham, who actually is not qualified to teach, and he teaches, so naturally he causes, he causes
problems.
The problems in the world. And of course, we had other cases that were also mentioned previously. So now then the Mishnah continued by saying, and also there were Makos Prushim, in other words, literally, the makas, in other words, the problems or the blows brought about by Prusha. Now, this in itself is very unusual for the simple reason that normally when we speak about the Prushim, we speak of them most highly. Because after all, the English translation of the word Prushim is Pharisees.
Pharisees, yeah.
Okay. The New Testament made them all into a bunch of hypocrites and everything else, and therefore, you know, along came, you know, who, and, you know, he was the only honest man, you know.
Yeah.
But, needless to say, it's a very, very prejudiced point of view that we find in the New Testament, where the Pharisees were being condemned. The truth of the matter is, I mean, that the Prushim were, in general, people who were very, very zealous in the point of view of trying to perform a mitzvah the way it's supposed to be performed. And, the Judaism that we have to our very present day is Judaism which is really based upon the Pharisaic tradition.
Is that right?
Yeah, right. I mean, they were the ones who set the tone because they were the ones who were the Rabbonim, the Chachomim, and, so that whatever we have today until we have the various heresies.
What is the word? Where the name came from?
Pharisee. Okay. Parush means somebody who is separated from whatever may be. In general, the idea is to be parush from tumah. In other words, you separate yourself from anything which is unclean.
Yeah.
So that this is the reason why they got the name Parush. Okay? So, as I said, I mean, we are actually the inheritors of the Pharisaic tradition to this very day.
and all the great names that we read about over here in the Gemara and centuries that followed. Whether it was, let's say, people who were, you know, like Rashi, the Rambam, so they're all people who follow in the Pharisaic tradition. So that over here, we suddenly come across a brisa that we're going to have right now, in which we see that even so, they were critical of certain types of Prussian. And who are these
critical
types of the rabbis?
No,
they were critical. Why? Because obviously, in most cases, as we'll see, they felt that these people were putting on an act without actually being sincere in their dedication. This is the reason why. All right. So, second line. Okay. It says Tana Rabbanan, right? Our sages taught us, which means, you know, that you always find, you know, that's a statement from one of the sources like the Sefer and so on. All right. So Shiva Prushim Hain. There are seven different types of Pharisees, of Prussian. I'll stop using the translation Pharisee because I don't like the term, since, you know, the New Testament
uses it,
and also it became a term of contempt among them. And to this very day, unfortunately, if you'll take a look in the dictionary, you'll still see that the word Pharisee is equated in the average Goyish dictionary with the word hypocrite. Okay? All right. So, what are these seven types of Prushim? So, first of all, they say Porush Shichmi. So, this is a Pharisee, or this is a Porush, who is Shichmi. Now, the question is, what is Shichmi? Okay? We'll find out in a moment.
Okay.
Because right now, we'll first go down the list, and then we're going to take them phrase by phrase. Okay? The next one is Porush Nikpi. Then comes Porush Kizai. Porush Miduchaya. Porush Machogusive Senon. Porush Miahava. Porush Miyira. Okay, so now they go into the first group of people, and we'll see, you know, that as they, as we said a moment ago, in general, what is their objection to this type? Okay, so first of all, who is the Porush Shichmi? How did he get this name of Shichmi? So the answer is Zeho Eise Masi Shchem. This is a person who does what the people in Shechem did. All right? Now the question is, so what did the people in Shechem do? Okay. First of all, what incident are we talking about? The answer is, we're talking about what we read about in the Torah just a few weeks ago. Namely, if you remember, the people of Shechem, the prince of Shechem, what did he do? He raped Dina, the daughter of Yaakov, right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Now let's take a look at the Rashi to understand better what it is. All right. It says, Masa Shechem, Shemolu, Shelo L'Shem Shemayim. People of Shechem then circumcised themselves. If you remember, the prince said to them that if they circumcise themselves, then the Jews will intermarry with them, and all the possession that the Jews have will pass over to them. Okay? So when they circumcised themselves, it was not L'Shem Shemayim. It was not for the sake of heaven,
but
for greed, and it's an ulterior motive, right? So Abzeh, so likewise, this Porush, who we call Porush Shichmi, right, is Masav L'Hanoseh. Whatever he's doing, it's only for his own benefit. Sheyechabduhu b'nei Odom, that people should show honor to him, v'lo l'shem Shemayim, but not for the sake of heaven. So this is the first classification. All right. Then, what was the next one over there? It was, Porush Nikpi.
Nikpi.
All right. So what is my Porush Nikpi? So he says, Zeh Haman Kifes Raglo. This is a guy who knocks his feet together. So what is he? Knocks his feet together. So Rashi again. Thank God we have a Rashi. He says, Mahalech Bishiflus Ekevitzad Gudl. In other words, when he walks with his heel in front of his toe, his big toe. This is the way he walks, right? Like this. In other words,
he kicks it.
Oh, yeah. He walks step by step, putting one. Now, why is he walking like that instead of walking like a mensch? This
right.
is what Rashi wants to know. So the answer is, the Yeno Meirim Raglav Minoritz, first of all, he doesn't raise his feet from the ground, right? Umitoch Kaf, and because of this, Manakef et Baisar Ba'avonim. What does he do? He causes his toes to stumble against the stones in the way. So why is he doing this? So again, the answer is because he wants to show how humble he is, or something like that. And he doesn't dare to look to see what's going on. He doesn't want to see a woman, perhaps, or something like that. You understand?
Mishabas.
Right.
this is also has to be considered in the same category. Remember, we had on the previous page, for example, that one of the people who was also among the Bali Olam, like he was a Chosid Shoita, right? And when, at that time, what was the definition of a Chosid Shoita? In other words, a Chosid who is a fool.
Yeah.
He sees a woman drowning, and he refuses to do anything to her.
Doesn't want to go in the water with her.
Doesn't want to look at her, so he does nothing to save her. Exactly.
He's a shirta, yeah.
Yeah, so he's a shirta. He's a fool. This is not the, what a chassid should be. Okay. All right. So well, this guy also, I mean, he doesn't want to look up to see what's happening, and he doesn't walk like a mensch because he doesn't. He's afraid of what he might see. Okay. Then what is the next category? It's Sporish Kizai. Kizai is from the expression lehak is dam, which means that you let the blood flow. You let blood, you know, like people used to steal bunkers or they cut themselves with knives in order...
Bloodletting. Yeah.
Bloodletting, right. So, what is this? So, Rashi again explains. All right. So, he says, Amar Rab Nachman Bar Yitzchak, first of all, the Gemara gives the explanation, says, Ze hamak is dam like solim. What does he do? He causes his blood to be spilled or to be let by rubbing against the walls. So again, Rashi wants to explain what does he mean. He says, Oisa atzmei ka otze meinov. When he walks, he makes himself appear as if he is shutting his eyes to what's going on. Shelo yistakel b'noshim, what I said before, it's a similar idea, right? In order not to look at women, right? Umetoch kach, and because of this, he hits his head on the wall because he's walking with his eyes closed, right? The Adam Yotze, and then the blood it flows, right?
Excuse
so,
me.
Right.
Where does it say in the Torah that you're not allowed to look at a woman?
It doesn't say so specifically.
Well, a lot
but
of things
of course, the idea, you know, if sneers, obviously, is an important factor. For example, if you remember a famous posuk that we have at the end of the Novi Micha, says Higid lecho odo matoiv, right? That God has told you, O man, what is good. V'mar Hashem derish bimcha, and what does the Lord require of you? Kiyim asos mishpat, right? You should do that which is right. The Ahavat Chesed, and show, you know, loving kindness to other people.